I'm going to sit down because the microphone will have reached. Hello and welcome. I'm Alexandra Jones. I'm the Chief Executive of Centre for Cities, which is the only think tank dedicated to understanding and improving UK city economies. Thank you all so much for coming out on a slightly drizzly evening. I'm delighted to see you all here in Manchester for the third in our series of events on mayors and new mayors in city regions. The election of mayors in May 2017, so mayors across a mix of local authorities in Greater Manchester, of course, the Tees Valley, West Midlands, Liverpool City Region, Sheffield City Region, and the North East, and maybe more places, who knows. It's a really historic moment. At the moment in the UK, London is the only... I'm going to stand up, can you still hear me? It's much better in this room to be able to see. London's the only city in the UK with a metro mayor at the moment, although I know Greater Manchester has an interim mayor. But around the world, powerful local mayors, directly elected, with real decision-making powers and some budgets, are the norm rather than the exception. And I think what we're seeing around the world is a real shift in countries like the United States and Canada, across Europe, a real shift with mayors being seen as the people who take decisions, pragmatic decisions, when all sorts of things are going on at the national level. Mayors are the ones who need to keep making decisions, keep cities moving, make sure they're working with their counterparts across the country, across the world, to make sure cities are still open for business, looking after their citizens. And I think mayors, local leaders tend to be very trusted, tend to have a great deal of power and authority, and have the chance to implement bold ways of doing new things, of improving local areas, and responding relatively quickly. It's an area, as one business said to me, that's big enough to make a difference and small enough to make a difference to people's lives. And often the city region really reflects the local economy as businesses understand it and as people understand it. So most of the time when you're travelling to work or to go out or to visit a museum or you're doing business, you don't know you've crossed an administrative boundary. And that's very much where I think these metro mayors can have huge power. And there's huge potential, I think, for the new mayor of Greater Manchester to be someone with a high national profile, going out to bat for Greater Manchester when it comes to public investment, when it comes to private sector investment, when it comes to just a national conversation about what's happening in the UK, what's happening in local areas. And I think ensuring more decisions where it's appropriate are made locally to reflect what the local area needs. You'll know much more within Greater Manchester about what Bury and Oldham needs and Manchester needs than they will in Whitehall, where far too many decisions still get made. But I think if the new mayors are going to realise their potential, there's a real need for public debate about what they're going to do. And we did a poll recently of people living in the regions which are going to get mayors. We found that just under half of local respondents knew about the mayor. It's not bad, a year out, it's not good enough. We need more people talking about this. We need, and as an organisation that's argued for metro mayors, mayors of the city regions for years, what we want is to ensure that people know about the role and are talking about what they want from the mayors. And we're undertaking a big programme of work to increase public engagement, public awareness of which this is part, of which the polling on your chairs is part, and you can read it yourselves. But I think it's useful to make sure lots of people are talking about this. We're doing lots and lots of blogs, conversations, events, and if you've got ideas about more things we can do, do let me know. The polling itself, I think, highlights that there is an appetite for this. So nearly 3 in 5 adults in Greater Manchester want the new mayor to have more powers than local leaders, for example. Within the area, when you ask what the most important priority is, the respondents said healthcare, which is interesting because it's actually only the Greater Manchester mayor who's going to have power over healthcare and social care. Other two things, emergency services and housing. When we look at the powers the mayor has, housing comes up again, as is a plan for the city region, but healthcare is top. So actually, I think there are people thinking about this and there are some clear priorities starting to emerge. But what we want to see is a good debate. Lots of people talking about this and thinking about how will the mayor work, what should they do, how should they be scrutinised, what does this all look like, because it's a very new and exciting time. And as part of this discussion, we've talked about the priorities for this event, the priorities for the first 100 days. And I'm absolutely delighted to have the panel we have. So we've got Andy Burnham, well-known National MP and prospective Labour candidate for mayor. And I should say, we're absolutely delighted Andy's here. We're very much non-partisan. We're hoping to work with whoever the mayor is, and we'll be talking to Tony Lloyd and to Ivan Lewis. So it'll be great to have your view, Andy, of what should the priorities be, and what would you like to see the mayor do. I've got Professor Francesca Gaines, who's Professor of Public Policy at the University of Manchester and an expert in governance. So really looking forward to your thoughts on this. And Clive Miller, Chief Executive of the Manchester Chamber of Commerce. We were due to have Jennifer Williams, who's the Social Affairs Editor of the Manchester Evening News. Apparently it's been quite a busy day, and she sends huge apologies, but there's a couple of things that she needs to write about this evening, so really keen to be here, but as Andy was saying earlier, you know, it's not just a week, it's a long time in politics. These days it can be an hour. Without further ado, though, that's plenty from me. What I'd like to do is go to Clive and speak up with your thoughts on what should the priorities be for the new mayor.
Your pleasure. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me all right from this sedentary position now? Is that clear? I mean, Alexander, that was an excellent summary, and you've rendered as redundant, actually.
Never.
By the way, it's the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce, but there's a significant difference between the two things. But let me start with some context and some useful reminders about how far we've come. Ambitious, pragmatic, progressive, collaborative, offering solutions, not problems. I guess they're some of the values to underpin the success and the progress that Greater Manchester has enjoyed. The Mayor's job, ladies and gentlemen, is to build on those values and to amplify them. So that's, I think, an important starting point. Now, the physical and economic transformation of Manchester has also led to a transformation in how this city thinks about itself and how others perceive it. Well borne out by the President of China visiting us in November, borne out of the fact the first time the Mourinho and Guardiola's teams meet is in Beijing at the end of the month. We are a global city with a global presence now. And having an elected mayor, again, I use the word, I repeat it, will amplify this. Now, solid economic evidence proved that Greater Manchester offered the most potential for economic growth outside of the South East, and devolution was hard won over 15 and 20 years. It wasn't something the government gave us, it's something that this city region fought hard for and basically put a case. You give us more money and we will use it more efficiently. We'll put in the governance structures that are necessary to enable you to do that. That led to the devolution deal 1, 2 and 3 and the further measures that were announced in last year's autumn statement. Now, hard on the heels of this, where things get a little bit confusing, the vision of the Northern Powerhouse was then born in 2014, with at least three calls would say, I don't really understand what Northern Powerhouse is and where devolution starts and the powerhouse finishes. But let me just say briefly, it was to create a Greater London, the equivalent of a Greater London urban system, with a scale to compete globally outside of the capital. City size matters more than ever, and companies requiring increasingly deep pools of skills and talent. Cities and towns within 40 miles of Manchester, 10 million people, the economy worth 290 billion, big numbers, so well connected that we create a single and large flexible and dynamic labour market. Individual city brands and distinctive literally made and other key competitive strengths. The goal of the transformation is the connectivity. In other words, the long overdue objective to have a more balanced, even-handed approach to economic development in this over centralised country. The recent publication of the Northern Powerhouse Independent Economic Review added more weight to the evidence that shows how much the economy of the North can be transformed by delivering this strategy. This must not be undermined, compromised, or slowed down following the Brexit vote. It must not. A point I made to the Chancellor when I gave a speech at the Chamber at the beginning of the month. Now, the elected mayor must have the achievement of the Powerhouse vision as a central objective. This includes government as well, so things like HS2 and government, where a degree of ambivalence is creeping into some of the announcements. Now, before I turn to the other key business-related priorities for that event, it's not just about what she or he does, but it's how they go about doing it. There is an opportunity to engage with citizens, business and other groups in a wholly new and fresh manner. This should not and must not be business as usual, but a new way of doing things. In those critical first 100 days, the mayor must clearly set out how they will do the job, as well as clearly articulating the added value of the office over and above what already exists. It's clear that the mayor will be the figurehead for Greater Manchester on the national and international stage, visible, vocal, ubiquitous and promoting the people and the business of Greater Manchester. But what else will the mayor do? The statutory duties must be made clear to everyone, transport, strategic planning, chairing the Land Commission, police and crime, chairing the combined authority. But this must be turned into a compelling narrative, a job that people can understand and value. Now let me turn finally and briefly to some other key priorities, because I'm only allowed three. I'll move on now to skills. Let's be clear about the skills. I want the men must be clear, with the help of people like myself, in this room, about the skills gaps that will inhibit economic growth and progress. about how we will tackle this using the powers we already have and set out the case for further devolution of power to look at piecemeal reform. At the moment, we have devolution of only part of the skills system. Ladies and gentlemen, you can try and reform the FE system until the cows come home, but if you don't have, you know, most of the budget they spend there is spent on putting right what comes out of the schools at the moment. We have no power over that at the moment. We have a nationalised system for schools and a nationalised system for apprenticeships. So there is a big disconnect there as well. And that will also include using the transport powers that the mayor will have to ensure that no one is stopped from accessing training and skills development or a job because they can't afford to travel to it. I will ask to come to business rates. Business rate devolution, 100% retention. The business rates is a good thing. I had some bizarre conversations about this over the last few years. But we have to be assured that the retention of business rates will be used to generate further economic growth in Manchester and not be used for other things. On the heels of that, I'll be talking about things like housing and international trade and digital connectivity, but I will stop there.
Thank you, Clive, very much. I think a really interesting kind of vision there of what the mayor needs to do differently and engage you differently and kind of setting out a national profile. So, plenty to talk about there. But let me hand over to Francesca. Interested in your thoughts, Francesca, on what should the mayor be doing, particularly in those first 100 days?
Well, we were asked to consider what the mayor would do in the first 100 days. And to paraphrase Harold Wilson, and I didn't think I would be the only person to use this phrase today, but a week is a very long time. And practically the only thing that's made me laugh politically over the last few weeks has been a great cartoon in the Telegraph by Matt of two politics students, and one saying to the other, "I'm going to study politics. I'm doing the course covers event from 8 a.m. on Thursday to lunchtime on the 24th. So, in considering what should be the priorities, there is a degree of crystal ball gazing, I think, that's required. And although we now know who will be the next Prime Minister, I have made a few assumptions here and set aside the possibility of an autumn election. So I have assumed that new Prime Minister May will share the goals of the current Chancellor in supporting the development of Greater Manchester in terms of developing a growth and employment and skills development in the region, seeing that as a vital part of improving the economy of the whole country. And therefore I've assumed that the current legislation and agreements won't change. And I've assumed that the Mayor and the Cabinet will continue to support the social goals set out in long-standing plans here to address social inclusion and the current inequalities both within and across the region. And despite the uncertainty at the moment, I think events like this are perhaps more than ever needed, and that Devo Mic is such an important and politically significant development. It's really important to have chances like this to talk about political and policy strategy. And that's one, from my perspective as a political scientist, that's one of the most potentially exciting things about the Devo arrangements, that it's already allowing electors and citizens, specialists, to contribute to discussions like this in the build-up to the election. So in suggesting three policy priorities, not everything that's currently done in Whitehall is going to be devolved here. And so in some ways, I think the mayor will have to have a very close focus on the very specific powers that they have. They won't, of course, have control over setting the budgets for local authorities. They've always already faced severe financial constraints and are likely to face further austerity measures because of the turmoil of Brexit. And this will have a huge impact on what the mayor can achieve. And the impact of Brexit and the Brexit negotiations will also have an impact on the climate. It might not necessarily entirely negative, but on the climate around attracting investment, retaining talent, and new business development. And this is something that the university is very concerned about. But what I want to say is that the powers and budgets devolved to the mayor are tightly drawn. So the primary duty will be to deliver on strategy on those areas: transport, housing, employment, business support. And it will be critical to use local knowledge and networks to target investment well to stimulate economic growth. And I note the figures in the survey that the Centre for Cities did in terms of what citizens express as their priorities, but I would suggest that transport is a key issue to get right. It's so very visible, and it is, as Clive said, essential that people can travel to access the opportunities, employment, training opportunities, from places that they're able to find housing and to be able to access that easily and within budget. So my first priority is a focus on transport. Having talked to lots of city mayors and police and crime commissioners, having said the powers are tightly drawn, in fact, having that directly elected mandate does provide huge political authority and to speak for the area and advocate. And although the mayor doesn't have specific decision-making powers in respect of health and social care, they will sit on the new Health and Social Care Partnership Board, bringing together the 37 different organisations and local authorities who will look to try and integrate health and social care. And of course, this is going to be hugely complicated. And I think that the mayor and the mandate and the political authority that the mayor will have will help to bring together the different sectors and enable those conversations to be had. And finally, my area of expertise is really in governance and democratic engagement. And I don't think we should, you know, we shouldn't forget that there is a vital need to improve democratic engagement given the tangible disengagement and dissatisfaction the vast swathes of Greater Manchester have been expressing. And I think having a directly elected politician who can speak for the area is a huge opportunity to improve trust in the political process. So my third priority is to really pay attention to the democratic development of the mayor's role, to make sure that decision-making is transparent, that there is strong scrutiny and checks and balances, that there are opportunities for all citizens to have a say, and that decision-making reflects the diversity of the Greater Manchester electorate. So those are my three pitches. It's a big job, it's a big intrigue, but one I think, despite the uncertainty, offers tremendous opportunities.
Thanks, Francesca. Really interesting. I think that point's about quite the formal powers, but actually a real mandate to do things that go beyond perhaps the formal powers. Congestion charge in London. It's an interesting example where there are formal powers to kind of do some of this that can just look like we could do it. And I think there's something interesting about that. So, yeah, again, lots to talk about. And now, Andy, really interested in your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alessandra. And thank you to the Centre for Cities for putting on this event, and for all of you, to all of you for coming, because this is exactly the kind of discussion that we need, isn't it, if we're to make what's coming everything that it should be. This is a big opportunity, as Francesca was just saying. Many of the things I want to talk about do touch on what Clive and Francesca just said. It's nice actually to have a bit of respite from the chaos that is politics right now. If an election is called, would somebody let me know and so I can leave and start making preparations?
Yet.
Not yet, but we're okay. It's like living in a constant transfer deadline day at the moment, with major announcements being made every second. But anyway, it's nice to have a moment to reflect outside of that. The challenge was, as you've heard, to set the three priorities in those first 100 days, and immediately the politician in me clicks into that business as usual mode that Clive was talking about. Well, I immediately would say, health and social care, my passion. It's great to see it so prominently reflected in the public's passion as well. I want to tell you all about my plan for that. In terms of other priorities, transport definitely at the top of my list, housing, young people. These are the things that I would immediately want to turn to. I would also have an eye on going to my old adversary stroke friend, Prime Minister May. She's obviously gone for the Tory leadership to escape my scrutiny as Shadow Home Secretary, but she'll find that if I am successful next year, I would want to be challenge her again. There is a big job, of course, for whoever is elected next May, and I hope it is me, to point out the difficulty that the mayor will face in terms of public spending. And if there is to be a kind of change in terms of the fixation on the deficit, as she signalled today, I think that is welcome. And it's something that we would need to make a very early argument about why we need to see long-term investment here in terms of the benefit of the to the city region. There are other things I could mention, but this brings me to my main point tonight. To do all of that and to get kind of immediately embroiled in all those things would be to miss a big opportunity. Because I think those first 100 days give the new mayor a chance to change things, to completely set a new dialogue, really, and a new way of doing things. And that, I think, is the opportunity that comes. There will be potential to build goodwill in that early phase. And I think that's really what I want to talk about to you tonight, because the more I've thought about this role, the more I believe it must bring a real change to the way we do politics. And it's in capturing that change that this will, in my view, could be a real success. Just to put that in context, you know, we are living in the midst of a political earthquake right now. That's how it feels. Things that perhaps we've taken for granted are breaking down. And the question is why? It's not just a referendum. I think this has been a long time coming. If you represent a constituency like mine, you will have heard the alienation building over a long period of time. There's a feeling that people are unrepresented by the political class, that some of the big issues, the big challenges that a former industrial area like Lee faced after the closure of the mines just haven't ever been properly dealt with. You know, places like Lee and Wigan, Oldham, Rochdale, they've had to deal with these things on their own, really, and it's taken 20, 30 years for them to begin to recover from the loss of that major industry. And consequently, there is a feeling that they are forgotten places. And I think what you saw coming through the referendum was a sense of that backlash against politics as usual. And the challenge for people like me is, are we prepared to hear that and actually act on it and do something fundamentally different? It is partly Westminster. I mean, Westminster, centuries of it, has created a very unequal country. It's given us a country with a huge north-south divide, where money, power and life chances are very unevenly distributed. It hasn't worked for everybody. It hasn't been fair in terms of transport infrastructure. You know, if people in London had the Greater Manchester Transport System, there'd be riots on the street. They wouldn't put up with it. And yet, you know, we are meant to. So politics hasn't worked for people. But actually, we shouldn't just always just say it's all about Westminster, because I would argue that Greater Manchester politics actually hasn't particularly worked for people either. There's a perception that it's done by a very small group of people meeting in this building, that it's very focused on the city centre, and that's great. And you know, I would be the first to pay tribute to Richard Lees and Howard Bernstein and others in terms of the huge improvement we've seen that Clive touched on. But if you went out into the outlying boroughs, they wouldn't necessarily feel that same sense of change. And there is this growing feeling that some areas are neglected. And those, if you look at the way the country voted on the 23rd of June, those are the areas that predominantly voted Leave. If you look in Greater Manchester, 7 boroughs voted Leave, 3 voted Remain. It's the 7 boroughs who voted Leave are those areas, the former industrial areas, that feel that they haven't been given the investment that they need in terms of infrastructure and jobs. But amidst all of this doom and gloom, there is something interesting happening. And if you're going around doing what I'm doing at the moment, you cannot help but feel a kind of huge revival of interest in politics. I think for the first time in 20 years, people have woken up a bit to politics. I did a meeting in Monton in a pub last night, and about 50 people turned up. The same in Stalybridge the week before. All of a sudden, people are asking questions and they're wondering about the future. They want to know, they want to be involved. And this contest, this mayoral election, needs to rethink itself in that post-Brexit context and start to offer people some solutions. I think this is our opportunity. Howard and Richard, Peter Smith and others, have put Greater Manchester in a leadership position. So the new mayor is very lucky because they inherit that leadership position. So the challenge is how then to make the most of it and make sure that Greater Manchester stays there. And my take on that is we now should pioneer a new way of doing politics, and we should rebuild politics from the grassroots upwards. And that is what I would want to do. So I've got a huge number of things that I've said in my campaign that I want to do. I'll give you a few examples. I do want to change the way we care for older people. I do want to tackle the housing crisis. I've said I want to end homelessness across Greater Manchester. I think we need to do much more in terms of how we help young people get on in life. Clive mentioned transport costs. We should be subsidising the transport costs of young people so they can take advantage of the opportunities that are out there. We should be saying that all young people at 18 can choose university or a quality apprenticeship. That is the kind of thing that we, in my view, we should be doing. We should have a much more integrated, higher quality transport system. Now, the old way of doing things would be for people in here to sit in a committee, develop a strategy, and then pass it on to the public bodies and the councils and say, oh, will you deliver that, please? I just think we've got to kind of tear up that thinking completely. And what I mean by a new politics is what I'm about to say. It's getting rid of that top-down approach, that idea that Westminster or this town hall can just throw out the solutions and everybody has to dance to that tune. I think you've got to start to build a social movement behind some of the policy objectives that I've just mentioned. You do have to build from the grassroots upwards. The first thing the mayor should do in those 100 days is announce that we're going to have a new relationship with the voluntary and the private sector across Greater Manchester. With the voluntary sector particularly, let's take one of those policy objectives, ending homelessness. The new mayor should say, let's set that together as our goal across Greater Manchester and issue an open invitation to any voluntary sector organisation, any church-based organisation, any charity, any individual who wants to be a part of making that come true, of making that change, that social change. And that is where the mayor can play a role, set the strategic objective and then facilitate the energy and the movement that might come beneath it. In every borough, you would want a network of individuals and organisations working together to achieve that particular goal. Or take young people. I would want to be knocking on Clive's door straight away to say, can we not get the businesses of Greater Manchester to come together to say we're going to sign up to a different way of doing things in terms of how we treat young people? That, do you know what, we're not going to pay them apprenticeship wage of £2.70 odd an hour. We're going to pay them a decent wage for anybody on an apprenticeship. That we are going to help subsidise the travel. We are going to invest in quality apprenticeships. That, it seems to me, is what the mayor needs to do. In those early days, signal a very different and a new way of doing things. Develop a new form of participative democracy. A greater Manchester model. A different way of doing things that is not about politicians in rooms, but is about building those social movements behind all of the policy objectives that I've mentioned. I'll finish on that point, so I'd rather get into everyone's questions. But here's kind of the test, I guess. I want to devote myself to this role. I've come to the view now that after 15 years in Westminster, that Westminster isn't going to change the things that I care about. For 7 of those 15 years in Parliament, I've been working with the Hillsborough families, and I can tell you all in this room, I've seen the worst of this country and the way it works, its disregard for the voices of ordinary working people in this country. I don't believe, actually, real social change will come. When people say to me, why don't you just stay in Westminster? That's what I get a lot. You'd be better off there. I don't see it that way. Genuinely don't see it that way. I think change has to come in terms of the way we're doing things, or we'll never reach out to those people who voted Leave in many of the constituencies of Greater Manchester just a few weeks ago. We have to signal that we're ready to do something fundamentally different to the way that we've done it before. So I want to devote myself to this. In my view, it's the way I can best serve my party and politics more generally in the coming years. I don't see this as like a one-term thing. I see this as something 10 or 20 a year. You could be stuck with me for that long if you vote for me. Maybe that's the worst advert for my campaign. But I mean it. I mean it. Because what I want to get to in, say, 10 or 20 years' time is a Greater Manchester where nobody is huddled in a doorway at night time in our towns and our city centre. I want a Greater Manchester where older people are not trapped in hospital beds because the social care isn't good enough, but they're better supported in their own homes. I want a Greater Manchester where every single child aged 13 or 14 has hope for the future because they can see a real opportunity for them at the end of school. I want a Greater Manchester where every child arrives at reception class ready to learn and not already falling behind because of the circumstances of their life. That's the kind of place I want to build, where we build a social movement to achieve those things, and everyone feels that they have a stake in building a Greater Manchester that looks like that. And actually then when you look at this place, it would look like a beacon of social justice to the rest of the country, that we're doing things differently. We're building a society where nobody is left behind. And because of that, you build support for the values of socialism and the Labour Party. That's how I see it. That's what I mean by going back to the grassroots. Business as usual clashes won't do it. The time has come to do something very different indeed. If you vote for me in this election, you'll be voting for real change. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy. So, changing politics, really, and changing the way things are done, and a threat that will be for 10 or 20 years as well. I'd like to take questions, because I know you've got to leave at 20 past to go to a hustings. So if you want a question for Andy, what I'm saying is do it soon. You can keep the questions brief. I'm going to get lots of questions, and then come back to the panel with as many as possible. So I have a microphone. Can we just start with the costume in the middle here? So start with down to the front. And work with that. Thank you. And if you could say who you are and where you're from, that'd be great.
Andy Warren from Infrastructure Intelligence Magazine. Just a question on infrastructure, which seems to be, for many politicians, the flavour of the month at the moment. Even politicians who maybe haven't historically been that much in favour of throwing money at issues, particularly post-Brexit. What do you think the role of the mayor will be to ensure that the many promises that are being made in relation to transforming infrastructure are actually delivered?
Great,
because I'm doubtful over whether that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Great question. And then the lady behind, please.
Judy Collins, representing the third sector. Health and social care kicked in 1st of April. I don't think that it's a very good start for devolution and in involving patients and public. And I think that probably by the time the mayor gets to sit at the table, everything will be done and dusted, super trusts, healthier together. So I think that's the real concern.
Okay. So a question about, is that what's going to happen? And if so, what does the mayor do about it? Yeah, great question. And then just behind, please, and then there's someone there.
Hi, I'm Nigel Rose. I work for MAC, and MAC is the voluntary sector infrastructure body for Manchester. I spent a lot of my time trying to encourage the local authority to work with the voluntary sector around things like homelessness, care of networks. And over the last 3 years, we've made a lot of progress in doing that in Manchester. I'm talking about not Greater Manchester. What we're seeing at the moment is a reaching away of power from the Manchester City Council to Greater Manchester and a reinstitutionalisation of a method of work which is basically a technocratic managerialism. So going further away from democratic involvement and towards a, if you like, civil service of Greater Manchester. And I'm just wondering for the panel, how do we actually move towards an actual proper form of democratic involvement when we go the opposite way at the moment?
Yeah.
Great question, thank you. And I know there was a question just here, just there.
Hello, my name's Bert. I'm a research fellow at the University of Salford working on participatory engagement in democracy, so we might get to know each other.
Yeah.
So we've got a somewhat light-hearted question for you. Somewhat. Ada Glau got elected as the mayor of Barcelona about 1 year ago, and standing on a citizens platform, and precisely was about trying to challenge just more business as usual.
Yeah.
One of the first things that she did was attempt to reduce the mayoral salary to €28,000. Now, this is symbolic, but also it's quite an important way to highlight the fact that economic growth does not go hand in hand with quality or inclusivity, and that's obviously experienced by a vast majority of citizens in Greater Manchester.
Yeah.
So two questions, really. What do you think about reducing the mayoral salary? And secondly, what opportunities are there to really be looking at participatory strategies that don't take economic growth as a be-all and end-all?
Yeah.
Great questions, thank you. And then there was a final one here. I know there's a few more, so we'll come back, but there's a final one.
Thank you, Alexandra. And to the panel, Firstly, do you agree that the current education system simply isn't working? And secondly, how far do you believe the mayor can go to change the system so it provides the outcomes for all young people across Greater Manchester for the needs of the region and the nation?
Thank you. I know there are a few more apologies, but I'll try and get to you if I can. Andy, can I start with you because I know you need to go? So questions are on infrastructure, pay
Yeah, some great questions. And Andy, on your question, and I said it at the beginning, the gap in the infrastructure here compared to London is, you know, it's a different country, isn't it? It's light years away. And how on earth, I mean, he might be the outgoing Chancellor, and that might present some issues here in terms of his project and the commitments that he has given and the continuity. You know, how on earth he at the last budget could have concluded that Crossrail 2 was the highest transport priority for the country when Crossrail 1 hasn't even opened is beyond me. Any objective analysis of the country's transport needs must conclude, in my view, that high quality, high speed west to east rail across the north of England connecting the big cities is by far and away the biggest transport priority in the country. I would not hold back from making that argument day in, day out as mayor. How do we get it over? Well, I think a couple of things. This Northern Powerhouse tag actually gives the new mayor a stick, if you like, to turn on to the government. You can't go around promising people, our constituents, a Northern Powerhouse, and then not put the money behind it. So they have gone out there and promised this, and our job, working with Clive, working with the voluntary sector and others, is to say, put your money where your mouth is. You've said this now. The first thing you've got to do to lay the foundations for a powerhouse is a modern transport system. And we now need to see the colour of your money to deliver that. How to put real weight behind that? This is where I think this reform gets interesting. Alexandra mentioned the other mayors that are coming through next year. Clearly there's an opportunity there to create a cabinet of the north where all those people come together around a table and then speak with one voice to government. And I believe any government would struggle of any colour. They couldn't ignore that voice of all of those individuals speaking for these great cities. And that's where it gets exciting, isn't it? And that is where you can really change the London-centric nature of our country and rebalance infrastructure investment. Judy, on your point, I share some of your concerns, but to be honest with you, I feel the challenge that we've got facing our health and care system is so great that nothing is set in stone, and there will need to be an ongoing process of integrating health and care. This is the great reason why, the biggest personal reason why I would like to do this this role, because I do have a clear vision of what I want to do with the NHS and care, and that is to bring social care into the NHS as part of one system, no longer two systems, one system that can deal with an individual's physical, mental and their social needs, a system that starts in the home and works preventatively to keep people there. That, before we get into structures, in my view, is what we've got to do. We've got to spell out very clearly the model of care we would want for all older and vulnerable people in Greater Manchester. And that is where I see my role as the mayor, to give absolute clarity on that so that everybody knows what we're trying to work towards. And I don't see any possibility of doing that without the voluntary sector as a very, very important player in that, providing that low-level support, the first-stage tier support, to older people in their communities. The public spending outlook demands that we do that, and it demands that we have a different relationship with the voluntary sector, which takes me on to Nigel's question. This is it where I think we do need to signal some real change. Where's Nigel? I've lost where Nigel. Sorry, move behind me. You mentioned a change that's been taking place in Manchester. We've had it in Wigan as well. Their relationship and their attitude, probably a better word, attitude towards the voluntary sector, has undergone a massive change in the last 3 years, from one of kind of slightly patronising disregard to one of dependence and trust. And it's a great thing to see. However, it's not replicated across the whole of the public sector, is it? To have the voluntary sector going through annualised contracting, bean counting, all of these targets, ticking boxes, etc., it just doesn't work, I don't think. I think you've got to separate the voluntary sector from the private sector. not-for-profit from for-profit, because not-for-profit organisations can boost the well-being of communities, can't they, by involving more people in volunteering and the goodwill and the benefits that come from that. What I would want to do is set out the basis of a new relationship. Support voluntary sector organisations, not with annual contracting and project-based funding, but long-term partnership funding that covers core costs so that they can get on with the job of building out what they do over 5 or even 10 year relationships with the voluntary sector. It's a big opportunity to change that and not allow, what you said, that kind of bureaucratisation of the role or the relationship coming in with the combined authority initiative. In terms of just what you were saying about grassroots, I think the style of politics does have to change. I'll just say a little bit more about that. You were saying about democratic involvement. I'll be quick, sorry. But just a couple of quick thoughts. I would want to be highly accountable. I would want the public to have an e-position system so that they could call in or challenge any policy of the mayor. I would want councillors to have that ability as well. You've got to push the power down so that the mayor can be held to account and that the policies and priorities of the mayor can be challenged. And that is true grassroots involvement. Bert, on your point, if the new mayor gets into things, stories about salaries and new buildings and all, then forget it. That 100 days is lost. The goodwill, the moment you get, will be gone. And I have no interest in taking a large salary. I'm not doing it for that reason. I have no interest in building a gleaming new building where the city hall will be. This has got to be about all the boroughs of Greater Manchester, all the people of Greater Manchester. They have to have trust in this person. They're doing it for the right reasons. Otherwise, all of these fine words I've given you about new politics will not mean a thing. So, I can't sign on what figure you've got in mind, but it's not about that. And if it becomes about that, then it'll all be lost and we will be back to Clive's politics as usual. And then lastly, sorry, there are big things to cover in a few thoughts, but the education system. I mean, I just want to finish on this point because it is a really important one. We still live in a society in 2016, sadly, where the postcode of the bed you're born in still pretty much determines where you end up in life. And young people here don't get the same opportunities as people elsewhere. You know, if a young person here wants to go to a job interview in London, it might cost half. They couldn't afford to do it, could they? You know, they are held back in so many different ways. And we have a school system that I would argue is not helping, because the logic of the way schools are inspected and evaluated is to focus on the university route, the 5 A to C's. And schools becoming more and more like exam factories, focusing on that university route. The problem with Westminster policy is that for decades there's been a snobbery about technical education. You know, the thrust of policy has all been on the university route, and it's neglected those kids who want something different. So I will finish on this point. The trick is, as Clive said, you would want more ability to influence what schools do. The trick is, can you build an education system in Greater Manchester that is about all kids, not some kids? At the moment, I'm afraid it's about some kids. And the big challenge working with business is to say, can you completely redesign that 14 to 19 route? Get quality apprenticeships for all young people at 19, 18, 19 who want them. And a small thing, but maybe it will help young people. I'm committing to giving a free bus pass for 16 to 18 year olds so they can access those opportunities across Greater Manchester. You know, I'm in politics to change, make this country more equal, to redistribute life chances, to give everyone the same chance in life. And you've got to go back to the education system and the early years if you're prepared to make that a reality.
Thank you. No, that's fine. And I think, because I know a number of people were asking questions of Andy, and I know you've got to go. Before you do, is there anything, and I'd like to come back to you both for more detailed answers. Before Andy goes, is there anything in particular, Francesco, Clive, you'd like to reflect on and answer to the questions? I know, on participatory democracy in particular, Francesco, or some of the points on infrastructure, Clive, briefly, in 30 seconds. I know you're going to go, Andy, but...
Francesco?
Well, just very briefly, I think that one of the... My experience from talking to other city mayors is one of the advantages of a mayor is because they want to go, they need your votes, they do go out and talk to people in innovative ways, they reach out to communities, and I think we'll see that. And I think we have the opportunity to have a people's parliament here in Greater Manchester to allow those kind of conversations to happen and lead the way for other areas that are devolving powers.
But I also don't think we should lose sight of the fact that I think there are something like 600 councillors across the 10 authorities, all of whom are deeply connected to their communities. So actually, part of the trick is to find a way of having a conversation also with those representatives.
And I'll come back to Member Clive. Anything else before...
You're right, there's a lot of hype and a lot of talk about this, but we've got to hold people accountable. And Andy's right, we have got this Northern Powerhouse brand. My problem with that brand is it's been overstretched and misused. You know, it was a brand that stood for connecting a handful of closely located cities around 40 miles apart, a 40-mile radius of Manchester. If you connect those effectively and you get journey times to Leeds of 25 to 30 minutes, you transform the economy. You transform the labour movement, you transform the cultural and the arts movements between these economies. It will not deal with inequality per se, but my God, it will give an economic boost and a rebalancing effect this country's not seen before. There is absolutely no reason why the Brexit result should in any way take away any of his commitments to that investment. Because I tell you what, you can talk about next round of quantitative easing, invest in the infrastructure, and you're using your money properly and you're using it in the areas that need it. Well, I would say about education is, look, some of it's really broken, but some of it isn't either. I think that one of the strange things about this country, when we finally get ourselves around thinking about vocational education seriously, we take away the careers advice and guidance system, which actually gets people going in the right directions. It's absurd. And the difficulties of devolution are it is to be explained.
Yeah.
And so we've got control over FE, but as I said to you earlier, most of the problems of FE emanate from what they have to put right coming out of schools. And I'm not blaming the schools. They're dealing, as Andy said, some very difficult things we've got to help them with.
I'm going to come back to you, Claire, but I know Andy's going to go to your hosting. So if I can say thank you to Andy, then come back for a couple more questions to you two. But
thank you. And to say thank you everybody for coming. Just say one last thing. I think Claire's absolutely right. Just a thought. Theresa May, actually, if you've heard her speech today, there's something to work on there, isn't there? She's talking about all of the divides and in society, and what we can't allow is any kind of change now or any derailing of this. You know, it really is important that we do speak with one voice and say, you know, this has to come and it has to be followed up on now, whoever the new Chancellor is like to be. And Francesca's point is, I think it is really, this point is making about building a social movement. There are all those councillors. It's crucial that this agenda is passed down. It's not owned by everybody at the moment, is it, in Greater Manchester? It's felt to be the preserve of a few people who meet in here. It's absolutely vital that you help me or whoever there is to really pass this power down and really rethink how you involve communities in a meaningful way rather than in a token way. And that will be the test of it if you can really build a new style of politics. Westminster politics is broken. Honestly, I think that's what you're witnessing now. People are rejecting it in quite a big way. So here's our chance, Greater Manchester, we're at the head of the queue. We can build a new model of politics. I would just say, why don't we go out there and do it? Thank you very much.
Thank you for staying there.
Well, I've got some interesting questions on some advantage sector. That does interest me, and I think one of the things I would say in your reflection, you're talking about this point moving towards a sort of mechanistic process. Well, the interesting thing to observe about devolution is devolution began to hit. Of course, a lot of the ambitious thinking begins to vaporise because you're involved in process all
yes,
the time.
Absolutely.
So 18 months ago, I was involved in more interesting conversations about some of the problems facing education than I am now, and it's literally people have got a mountain of tasks to get through, coming out from central government to pass it over, and people can lose track of some of the visionary stuff. I think that's exactly the point that you're getting at there. Well, I would say that back to the knowledge sector, you are a difficult sector to deal with collectively. And I'm not saying, you know, we're just going to be sympathetic to each other. I have so many people coming to me saying, can you help? I would love to help, but I can't deal with you all individually. And there has to be all clarity in what you want.
It's so patronising, it's incredibly patronising.
It isn't, because you are. I can get 50, 60, 70, 80 different requests, and it's very difficult to talk to Blake.
I find it terribly difficult to talk to private organisations.
I think this could run and run.
They come to me about it.
And I think this might be an area of debate where there's kind of clearly a disagreement over drinks afterwards. We do have drinks afterwards, and we're nearly there. Just give us a moment. But I think before we do, because I think there was a kind of couple other points raised. And Francesca, was there anything else you wanted to say on the kind of democratic issues, which I think has come out a number of times? This needs to be a different kind of way of doing things, and how do you make sure that the question about, you know, how do you make sure it's not all about economic growth? It's actually there's a participatory element where that's not the only thing. Have you got any reflections on that? And then I'll ask a final question and wrap up.
Yes, I think that part of the challenge for the mayor, part of the advantage of having a mayor, is the ability to speak decisively, to take swift decisions, and to have conversations with all different sectors, but that must be balanced against the need to have consultation, and that's a very tricky thing to do, to be both decisive and consultatory. So that's why I'm interested in the arrangements to support the governance of the mayor, in that you have transparency, that you have checks and balances, and also I think things like equality assessments are going to be valuable. I mean, at the moment, when these budgets are decided in Whitehall, civil servants will do what's called an impact assessment, and they will try and set out what the policy is designed to achieve, who it might affect, what might the impact be, and that's part of the policy-making process. And when those funds come to Manchester, we need an infrastructure behind the scenes. I don't mean technocratic managerialism, but we do need the policy capacity behind the scenes to see what policies might do to the many different diverse communities, and are the aims of the policy going to achieve that overall goal of growth and social inclusion? And we do need to have those kind of things behind the scenes. So that's my concluding pitch.
Thank you. And I think if there was, we asked you for three things, and that was difficult. If I was going to ask you for one thing, the one thing that the mayor should be thinking about, and I don't mean the first 100 days, so one of the kind of lessons, we did some interviews with advisors to the Mayor of London. We did kind of 10 lessons, so we did 10, so I make you do three and then one. But one of the things that they said is actually, one of the ways to make a big difference is to pick something, pick a big issue, not too many of them, and really go for it, and make sure you're doing it in a really effective way. And I think that was something that both Ken and Boris, very different characters, said was really important, because the only way to cut through things is to make sure you're really focused, and then you're working with councils who will continue to do some of the really good work that they need to do, and it shouldn't be taken up to a level. If you were going to kind of say, you know, that there's one big issue, and you can, I know you've talked about others, and you might go back to them, but is there one big thing that you think the mayor, he or she, should really make sure they are doing over the first term to make sure that Greater Manchester and the whole of Greater Manchester, which is clearly a big issue, sees the difference? Clive.
I think it's interesting you talk about Boris, because no one actually cared about what Boris Johnson was actually responsible for. It's what they thought he was responsible for, and that's one of the great lessons, I think, about how mayors can use their perceived power in that. I will give you an economic answer, because that's what I would do, and I think that there are real dangers, a friend alluded to it there, that you could get some real knee-jerk reactions to the problem, the sheer extended period of uncertainty that we're going to go into. So I would say Manchester has got a clear leadership position as the second city in this country, and it can mobilise a lot of cities around its banner, and I think this Northern Powerhouse vision of a more balanced approach to economic development is the thing that the Mayor of Manchester should absolutely, clearly and unequivocally lead.
Thank you. Francesca?
Yes, I think I'd agree. And also the point I made earlier about transport. I like the idea of free bus passes.
Well, I'm not going to comment on any of the proposals from Andy. As I said, we're very much non-partisan, but thank you all very much for coming. I mean, I think it's been a good discussion. I think there's plenty of scope to talk a lot more about it. And we always try and do hour events, because we think that fits into people's lives. This is one of those ones where I think an hour and a half would have given us a chance to get more questions from you and actually get into the issues in a bit more detail. And I hope that you'll have the chance to stay for a few drinks and we can talk a bit more about it. But I think that overwhelming thing, a need for a compelling narrative and a story that the mayor tells, that he or she tells for Greater Manchester, for the whole of the area, that is about how do you make sure it's about economic growth and inclusion, and that there are benefits throughout the area, and actually not just making sure you make the most of the powers, but not being restricted by the powers. And you're working with other mayors across the north, and I'd say across the country. Well, certainly, as Centre Cities, keep on publishing free things about this, doing free events, doing the polling. Please keep talking to us. But in the meantime, thank you very much for coming this evening. Please do stay if you can. And in the meantime, please do join me in thanking the speakers. Thanks.